Welcome to Sustain and Innovate Conference by Performance Days and Sports Fashion by SAZ. You are listening to an expert talk from November 2019. Ms. Ulrike Alt, Textile Specialist, presents Sustainability in Textiles is More Than Just Recycled Fibers.
Directly going on with our next topic. So in a short overview, I will present you all the things Performance Days and the Performance Jury found out about sustainability. And as a special guest in about 15 minutes, I will talk to Dr. Rüdiger Fox. All of you know them. He is the CEO of Sympatex, and this is one of the companies that are very, very concerned about sustainability and got lots of efforts already until now. But first, let's have a look at there are some things Antje already told us before, but we made an overview about sustainable challenges and problems. And I think what we learned from our lecture before is that the more you know about sustainability, the more you know about fabrics, about fibers, the more complicated it will be to really design a sustainable product, because we heard the discussion, if we use bio-based materials, are there any other dangers with it? So with each material, I think the brands choose, they always have to see all aspects around it. And so this is a learning. And I think the industry is trying to work on, and the industry is trying to find solutions that are really good. So we started about, 25 years before with this terms of recycled plastics. And actually, we are talking about maybe they are shed more microfibers or not, but we shall not dismiss recycled plastic. So this is, I will present you what all our specialists at the Performance Forum jury find out. And yes, the textile industry has an impact on the environment, but there are many developments that can make the textiles more sustainable. So let's start with something Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General, told to the world, that saving our planet, lifting people out of poverty, advancing the economy, growth, these are all one and the same fight. So we must connect the dots between climate change, water scarcity, energy shortage, global health, food security. All these solutions must be one solution for all. And this is not only for the textile industry, this is for all industries we have on this world. And it's very hard to follow, but there are lots of NGOs try to solve the problem. So if you have been at our S-Wall at Performance Forum, you saw that we tried to give an overview about all sustainable efforts, about sustainable products, about sustainable production. And this is concerned to the guidelines of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. These are 17 goals, and if you can follow the goals, you can be sure that your all what you are doing, choosing the products and producing and everything, really is sustainable. So therefore, please don't hesitate. Go and read all the things we found out at the wall, because this was a deep insight into sustainability in functional textiles. So we don't want to talk so much about bad things, but as well, I am starting with bad facts too. But later on, I think it's very important for all of us to know that we want to sell functional clothing, we want to sell active sports clothing. So this is a kind of, we want to sell emotion, we want to sell good feelings. So I think we don't have to talk about all these bad things all the time, but about all the good solutions we already found. So the bad facts, the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe told us that the fashion industry produces 20% of wastewater, what a pity, and is responsible for 8 to 10% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. And more than $500 billion of value is lost every year due to the clothing underutilization and the lack of recycling. So these are big points we have to change. Another bad fact is that if we don't change the way we are producing and we are using our garments, that we would have an impact of more than 26% of the carbon budget with our fashion industry. This is what Ellen MacArthur Foundation found out and brought in their new textiles economy report. And the McKinsey report in 2016 found that 3/5 of all clothing will end up in an incinerator or landfill within 1 year after being produced. So this is what Antje mentioned before, the fast fashion. So you don't wash it anymore, you just buy a new product. And if we don't change here, it's expected fashion waste will increase to 148 million tons on the world. And this is raw material. This is where we can make new clothes out of, or where we can reuse if we change it. So one of the positive facts is, despite of all grim statistics, lots of companies came to the Climate Action Summit. Lots of companies signed the Fashion Industry Charter for Climate Action, and they are really working hard to improve their way of producing, to improve their way of climate responsibility and so on. So what's the good news with this? 60% of millennials actually say they want to shop more sustainably. So it's not only that we should produce it, we are doing it, the textile industry is doing it in great parts. We should communicate about this, we should talk about this, we should find a way to explain to the customer why this product is sustainable, maybe why this costs a little bit more, but it's very long living. So, and 12.5% of the global fashion market already has pledged to make changes by 2020, so not far to see. This is what the Global Fashion Agenda found out. Up to, and this is, I think, is very important, that up to 2/3 of the environmental impact of fashion happens at the raw material stage. This is why we are here, this is why we are talking about new sustainable fibers. This is talking why we are talking about these solutions to produce more sustainably, without polluting water or air or soil, without using raw materials that can't be replaced. So, of course, the question is, what can the fashion industry do? And all this day from now on until 5 o'clock in the evening, you will hear lots of experts who can introduce you lots of solutions, and we are doing this at the Performance Forum as well. So let's talk about this reusing, recycling, and circularity. This is a theme I will talk to Rüdiger Fox later on, because it's so important. Because actually it's estimated by Ellen MacArthur Foundation that less than 1% of material used to produce clothing is recycled into something more. So if we talk about business, it's a loss of more than $100 billion that we have. What's the best practice? You will hear it, you can see it, you can read it at the performance wall. Of course, the textile industry is looking and trying to create recyclable clothing, because this is so important to close the loop. And one of the first steps is produce, to develop, and to use monocomponent materials to make the garment, even the functional jacket, recyclable after the first life and give it a second life. So this is what the Global Fashion Agenda also tried to write in the Circular Fashion Commitment. The action points are implementing design strategies for recyclability. You will hear more about this in the talks in the afternoon. And we need an increasing volume of used garments and footwear collected. We need an increasing volume of used garments and footwear resold or remanufactured, and an increasing share of garments and footwear made of post-recycled consumer textile fibers. So in 27, they undersigned it. As of July 2019, the signatories has reached 21% of the targets. So they work, but actually all of us know we have to work faster and develop more sustainable things as well. And there's one other fact, because if the average life of clothing was extended just by 3 months, it would use the carbon and water footprint they caused, and as well as the waste generation, by 5 to 10%. So only 3 months longer. So if we are able to create very garments that lasts long, garments that have the right fashion and function for the thing we want to use it, and we all can use it a little bit longer, it would be such a great step, of course. And the next thing is, of course, let's talk about the clean water, soil, air, because all of you know it, the textile dyeing is the second largest polluter of clean water globally after the agriculture. There are many studies. I found one in the Natural Science volume 4, number 1. Textile dyeing industry as an environmental hazard. There are lots of other facts and figures as well. But what is the best practice? So we can't not only talk about, oh, this is so hazardous, and whoa, what is the fashion industry doing bad things? We have to change it. So the best practice is that on the one hand side, maybe use undyed fabrics, use natural dye stuff, don't use the chemicals inside, as Antje told before, and find new ways to dye without water, as the spin dye or solution dye or the hypercritical CO2 methods, for example. And of course, there's the problem with the chemicals as well, because Greenpeace in East Asia found in 2012, and this changed already, but not as fast as we want to have it, that in most garments still are processed some hazardous chemicals, but there are lots of things on the way. So the textile industry banned PFC, as we heard, even if there were lots of challenges, because the jacket should keep you dry. So they banned PFCs and improved the way of materials, of choosing and producing materials and fibers. And actually, they use new guidelines. They follow a series of hazardous chemicals. They follow the Nordic Swan. And some of them, hopefully all of them next year, will use the HIG index. And Karin Ekberg already is here, and she will talk about this later and explain how it's working, because this tool is so fantastic, and I'm very curious to your lecture later on, Karin. And of course, there's the problem with the microfibers. There was a new study of researchers at the University of California at Santa Barbara. They found that an average synthetic fleece jacket releases 1.7 grams of microfibers each wash. And it's found that the older jackets shed more than the new jackets. So Antje told that we can have new ways, like the brushed sides made from biomaterials, or no brushed sides, because the textile industry already invented new ways to create warmth without microfiber or microplastic shedding. So not only the brushed surfaces from the natural fibers, but also lots of fabrics with pocket constructions where the warming fiber is inside the two-layer pocket. And the households, of course, can do their helpful thing as well, because they can use the nanoballs during the washing or use special dense washing nets, as you all know, the Coral Ball or the Guppy Friend washing bag. So there are... and also the invention of these washing machines washing without water. So there will be lots of new ways to reduce this microfiber shedding. But actually, until now, we all have to be aware that we should produce no more brushed surfaces, if it's possible. And one very important fact is, of course, we could talk much more about chemistry and about shedding and so on, but one mostly important fact is, let's talk about the good working conditions. All of you know that there are lots of improvements in Asia already. There are lots of monitoring, lots of transparency. And it's a very, very big business, because more than 15% of the world's employees are connected directly to the textile and apparel industry. So that's a huge amount of workers. And these social issues, like the elimination of poverty, the achieving gender equality, have very urgent importance. And so there are lots of things you can do, not only to monitor or have the glass factories or have a certificate, but also produce slow fashion, avoid the price wars. So don't go to the companies, to the sewing factories, to the mills and give them pressure, because most of the workers work more than 8 hours a day. They work on the weekends. They got very low wages. So we need fair wages that cover the life basic necessities. And we need equal rights in the factories. We have to ban the child labor. So, of course, there are certificates at the Fairwear Foundation, and they are very important. So all companies are invited to join things like this, and even HIC has a new tool where you can monitor these social challenges. So what's the homework for the brands or for the industry to do? So I found a great piece of homework by a common objective. The businesses can reduce their chemical impacts by seeking out materials, dyes and fabrics that meet the third-party certification standards, the NGO standards, and we need the NGOs, as you heard from Antje, to talk to the industry what they need to improve, what they need to change. And, of course, it's a thing of collaboration. You can be sustainable for your own, but it's better to talk to all the other companies and collaborate. So even with different programs and with the zero discharge or hazardous chemicals, and work with suppliers to replace the use of toxic chemicals, find safer alternatives, partner with companies who provide alternatives already. Check manufacturing plants, the dyeing plants, if they have adequate effluent treatment systems, if they have a wastewater circle and things like this. And consider the use of more natural than synthetic dyes already at a product design stage. So later on you can hear a lecture about designing sustainable. So it starts with the design. And of course, use order only the sustainable sourced fabrics with alternatives to chemicals into pricing models. So this is not my homework I give to you. This comes from the Common Objective platform. And one last thing is that according to the Global Fashion Agenda, actually still 26% of business owners believe that there's a low consumer willingness to pay a premium price for a sustainable product. So this is, and they think it's the greatest barrier. So this is why we have to talk. We have to talk to the retailers. We have to talk to the customers. Why this sustainable product not only is better, maybe it lives longer, maybe it's a little bit more expensive, but it's worth. If you go to a biostore and buy your biological food, you are very happy to pay $10 for one mango. And at the supermarket, you can get it for $1.99. And you say, oh, I pay it. I have a good conscience now. And I pay it because I know it's good for the environment. So maybe we can educate the consumer to think the same way with the garments. If we can be transparent and traceable, if we can prove that it's really better what we offer them. And there's a very new EU-founded project. The UNECE is mobilizing the industry to develop blockchain traceability tools. And they think this is very interesting because it can be a big step to get more transparency. So there's advice from EcoCult for consumers I found, and this is my last slide before I talk to Rüdiger Fox, because EcoCult advises the customers who wants to buy fashion or who wants to buy garment, first look for organic natural fibers or recycled natural fibers. Second, look for 100% natural fibers. Third, if you can't find this, look for 100% recycled polyester. or blended and virgin recycled, blended virgin and recycled polyester. Fifth, look for virgin polyester, and the last only look for conventional blended fibers or fabrics, as actually in the state now, they cannot be recycled actually. And so now, if you know lots of these homework to do, I would like to welcome Dr. Rüdiger Fox together with you. Here we have the stairs, so jump on. Because all of you know that Sympatex is one of the most sustainable company, and I'm very curious to talk to you what will be the new development. So I hand over the mic. Thank you for being Thank you. Here. And so we in advance we talked a little bit about what can you tell to the audience, what's new, because there are always new developments in your company. And the first thing I was curious to know is, what do you think, which sustainable issues currently have a priority in the textile industry, or should have?
Thank you. And first of all, I need to correct, we're not the most sustainable company, but we try. And I will not talk on the company. I will talk on generic things, because I think that's important. I think the first time we met was about 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, when you started directly.
And I came from a very different industry and asked these naive questions about sustainability and had a great discussion. Well, will that come? And I think the positive side we need to see is sustainability is there. And I think there are only a few ignorants who say we can ignore it, it will go away. I think the industry in 3 years, which is amazing, has embraced the necessity. On the other side, when I look at it, and please allow me to simplify a bit, it's almost like there are three groups. Three zones. There's this kind of, I call it the cosmetic zone. Companies all of a sudden disguise as the most sustainable, we've done it for 30 years and never talked about it before. So the cosmetic zone are people who just pretend. I call them the great pretenders, some call it greenwashing. That is an issue we need to talk. We need to really look at where's reality, where's really change. There are small solutions which are great but don't change the world. Then there's a middle segment where more and more companies move in and try. And we will have good solution and we will have bad solution. We had this discussion around biodegradable, and funny enough, this notion of biopolyester or whatever you call it, bioplastic, is pretty wild, because it covers as much bio-grown polyester as much as perhaps degradable, and it doesn't need to be the same thing. So we need to talk on language, we need to talk on definitions, but there are new solutions coming up, which is great. And we need to debate them, probably pretty controversial. I'm a very big enemy of blockchain, because I believe it just consumes an incredible amount of energy to store data in a multitude of locations, because we don't trust each other. I think we need to build an industry of trust and regain the trust itself. And then there's perhaps this last segment of the pioneering guys. And I always say these are the guys who dare to fail. Antje was saying it before. We tried and we failed and we tried and get rid of PFC and we failed. And we do the same thing. We try things. And it doesn't work all the time, but we just try. In this group, we really try to imagine how this future looks. And I think we need these three discussions. We need to identify the guys who just pretend, because if the consumer identifies them, we also lose credibility as an industry. Then we need to work in that big group of doers, what are really helpful solutions which we can scale. And then in the prototype version, we also need to look at what can be the end solution. And that end solution, when I look at these 3 years, I always said by 2030 we could be perfect. Probably we could be actually by 2025.
That sounds really great. But could you give an example on both sides? So what already has been adopted very successfully, and what is a lot of work still to do?
I think I would drop the point very. What is visible that the industry starts embracing recycling of polyester. My data is from memory right. Textile Exchange published it a while ago when they said in about 6 or 7 years we changed from 6-ish% to 14%. 6% to 14 is lousy in 6 years. But it shows it's possible. So scaling 14% to 50 plus is probably only a matter of 2-3 years. I think that is in a way a success that we see it. I think where we need to have a discussion is that some of the issues, some do it with goodwill, some perhaps with bad will. We emotionalize things and make them huge, and we don't look at the big picture. We love repair. I think repair is a perfect thing we will need to do in the industry to extend lifespan. But first of all, clothing need to last. If I need to repair after 3 months, which I needed for some of my clothing, then I'm getting angry. So we need to combine it with longevity. We need to also make sure that repair just delays the problem. So once you have repaired it 10 times, there is a point when it dies. And at the moment, as you showed the statistic, 50% of the clothing end up somewhere in landfill or fire, typically in pretty uncontrolled condition. So we are, at the end of life, a large reason for all the problems of garbage in the environment. And so we need to really look at this, the full picture on circularity. I think there is still definitely a lot of space for improvement.
You are working very hard on circularity, so you do a lot of things for this. But what I wonder is if I, as a consumer, I don't need or don't want my jacket anymore each year, I can't close the zipper, for example, because I was growing. So actually, there's no point where I can give it back. There's no return system. So is this a thing we need a governmental regulation, or is this a part the companies should do? What do you think?
She didn't tell me that question before.
But yeah, that's
can
right.
Can I ask a person question before? Are you collecting paper at home?
Yeah.
Separate paper. You collect paper, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Where do you put it?
Into my paper bin. And
so you don't send the Munich whatever newspaper to the Munich newspaper,
no.
The Spiegel
no.
to the Spiegel, the
no.
Focus.
That's
to
right. Ah. Yeah, I understand.
You need to understand recycling systems never work if you send the product back to the original company. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Logistically nonsense. Nobody will ever go in his drawer and pick out the clothing and send it to the original
That's
firms
right.
if ever they exist. We have a system.
Yeah.
70% of the clothing in Germany is collected. It's about 60% mm-hmm. in the UK. Mm-hmm. It's across Europe, always in the range of 40 to 60%. We have the system. All we need to do is going behind that box where we drop that stuff and look what's happening. And out behind mm-hmm. that box, typically, 55% roughly is reused. Reused said, sent to third countries where it's resold for a second-hand market, and we can debate on the labor impacts and everything. But at the end of life, it will be fired or thrown away anyway there.
Right.
The other 50%, and this is a growing number because the quality of products that are giving away is reducing. This other 50% is half landfilled, half burnt or upcycled, downcycled. So it's simple. We just go behind the box and pick out the polyester to recycle, the whatever materials we can recycle, and just recycle it. It's the easiest solution. It's even much better than with all the plastic and the yellow bags and the collections. We have the system. We don't need politics. We just need to do it.
Yeah, you think so? This is a new way of business to collect it and reuse it or recycle it. Yeah, indeed. So you're right.
One of the French kings said in history, money doesn't stink. I think it sounds weird to go in a garbage bin, pick out stuff and make money out of it. But that's the principle.
That's right. So let's talk about a very big issue, the climate neutrality. Do you think that the textile industry can achieve this goal to become climate neutral?
Yes and no. No, because we will never be in a position that we can reduce all the energy emissions or the energy consumptions. What we need to look at how the energy is created, and we can do a lot of progress of how the energy is created. A lot of coloring processes are still done in a heating by wild carbon fires, and so changing this into gas is an improvement, but it's not carbon neutral, but it's a massive improvement. Now we need to look at the rest of it, how far we can go into fully renewable, which today might be solar-based, wind-based. Probably not everything. But the beauty with CO2, in my view, is that it's realistic to compensate. Planting a tree absorbs CO2.
Yeah.
It's confirmed by science. This is not a bad excuse. That's not greenwashing. Let's just plant forests. And I don't have the number in my mind. I calculated one time the CO2 numbers of our industry into trees. Mm-hmm. It's not huge. I think it was about 3% of the annual turnover of the entire industry to compensate 100% of our CO2. 3% is peanuts.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying definitely it is. I think step one is changing some of the processes which are very energy consuming into something more reasonable. Step two is in the process of designing, really looking at what are actually the colors, the processes, the materials that create a lot of CO2 in the construction. So really going not only in scope one and two, like some companies say, hey, we are CO2 neutral, and they are just in retail. And the products they process through make 95% of their footprint, and they ignore it. So, and the last step would be a compensation scheme where I believe by 2030 there is enough space on the planet to plant enough trees for our industry.
That's right, so let's do it. One other thing, as we talked about the circularity, is the cradle-to-cradle, is it a good solution?
If you would say both is pretty much the same thing, yes, definitely. Because because I think, and currently taking up the polyester, biopolyester, degradable polyester, the back-end discussion, which we currently have, some companies bring out new polyester, plastics, whatever, that pretend to be biodegradable. Some use the plastic bags at home for their bio whatever garbage. All the industry you talk to say it's a disaster because first of all that plastic degrades in a year and a half. If you go in a small prints, it takes a huge amount of time until under certain condition which barely are realistic in nature. Secondly, we have a challenge to explain to a consumer, hey, don't throw your bottle in the river. But if it's biodegradable, just do it because it degrades. That's the wrong discussion. it's just we can't do this. And the third, and I think that is the most important one, why should I destroy a product that I can reuse? Mm-hmm. So that's why I believe there are only two long, midterm, bearable solutions for any industry. The one is the bio-based, bio-grown. But if something degrades under humidity, it's hard to make a waterproof garment out of it because it degrades when you wear it and it rains. So there's a second part, which there is a place for plastic, but we need to close that loop entirely. So first of all, we need to make sure that the product is not degrading by reusing, recycling it. So it stays on a quality level that I can use it. Mm-hmm. It's not a solution to put the garments then in concrete or in the surface of streets because we have enough streets. So it needs to be somehow circular, ideally in the same industry. We also started with PET bottles into garment because that was a fast track, but that's not the end solution because at some point we initiate more PET bottles just to make garments. That's not really the solution. But I think circularity for everything that doesn't degrade naturally in a very short period of time is the ideal solution because we keep the value of the product without harming. And then we can have a discussion on low fashion, slow fashion, but I think slow fashion is more a social discussion we need to have on the generic way how we live our lives. But if we wait until slow fashion happens with solutions on our industry, the world is dead. So that's...
That sounds very clear. Thanks a lot. So, as you already talked about it, and we heard it from Antje, and I recommended it, so the longevity of a product, is this very important aspect in this context? Or
I heard that discussion popping up, especially in the last, 15, 16, 18 months, and it's amazing. If for a moment we go back in history 50 years ago, gradually, we discovered that this fantastic industrial revolution we started 150 years ago before has its side effect. We started having bad air in cities. We had started to have polluted air everywhere. And then came the solution, higher chimneys for companies to dilute the problem. I think the discussion around longevity is the same thing. I think longevity needs to be a given. It's a hygienic factor. If you pay 150 euros, 250 euros, 400 euros for a garment, you're expecting that it lasts. It's like telling a car, hey, the doors will close even after a year. So it's like a kind of ridiculous argument. Mm-hmm. And it's for us, it's a hygienic factor. It's not a sustainability factor because it doesn't solve anything. It just delays the problems. Delaying a problem is good, but it can only go so far. So that's why I believe, yes, there is a place, but that place is, you better don't talk about it. This is not a hero's argument. This is really something which needs to be granted in the product anyway. And if you don't have it, clear it as far as you
can. Yeah, I understand. Process. That's very interesting. So as we only have 10 minutes left and see there are lots of persons already lifting the fingers, I talked to Rüdiger if he has time to answer to some questions from the audience. So for the next 10 minutes, we can hand the mic over if there are any questions. So here's the first one. Thank you so much.
Hi, fascinating talk. Thank you. I'm really interested in the whole recycling aspect at the end of life. I've been speaking to quite a few people around over this last couple of days about, you know, where we are with the recycling industry, and your point about, you know, the systems are there, we're collecting the clothing. I totally get that, and I love the kind of simplicity of that. But when you talk to the people about how we're actually going to do it, how far away do you think we are? I mean, I know there's great companies working on those solutions, Worn Again, Infinited Fiber, there's so many out there doing really good things. But how far do you think, realistically, we are away from the stage where we can just take that kind of municipal recycling stream and put it into a system or many systems, if that's the way to go, and then genuinely be getting that circularity?
Yeah, first of all, I need to say and warn you, my wife always says I'm a born optimist, so addicted optimist. So you will never hear that's impossible for me. But from the experience of somebody who has no bloody clue on chemistry, who came in an industry, he has no idea about it, and is here for 3 years, I have to say in my simplified word, there's a range of solutions that starts from the mechanical one. You just crush it, put it back in the granulate, perhaps you mix a few virgin or PET bottles into it and you go for it. We have tried it 2 years ago, it works amazingly. Even if you have a pollution of 0.5% of polyurethane of whatever other materials, no big deal. But you get a decent gray. It's like the first cars of Ford. You can choose a color as long as it's gray. That's probably what you get. From the quality, from the performance, we didn't see a lot of degradation, even though I know there's a big discussion at the moment whether how quality-wise it's good enough. But I think there are some hurdles. It can help in some areas. It will not help in others. The other extreme is we take, and here I'm talking again polyester mainly, but polyester is half of our industry, so that's why also we focus mainly on polyester. Polyester, you can completely chemical cut it into pieces, my naive way of describing this complex chemistry, and rebuild it. That is probably extremely chemical prone to other problems and energy consuming. And then you have people like, you mentioned it, Worn Again, we work with, to figure out, is there some kind of in-between? Is there something where I can get a polyester out there which is exactly the same quality like the virgin and still don't have the downside of completely depolymerization and repolymerization? We believe it. That's why we put also money on the table to be in there, and we are one of the first test partners to try it out. My boss of engineering is a chemical PhD, so he said, yeah, that works. We looked at the material, it works. So that's our belief system. If we figure out it doesn't work, we'll find something else. But I think we only work for it for so long, but there are so many other stuff that we can recycle of a very similar composition. I don't believe there will be a long-term problem. It's just a matter of that we really put all our energy on it and just go for it. The other question on the collection, we really worked with SOEX and ICO and these big collectors and some others together, tried to form a consortium which is nothing else than putting the puzzle pieces together. We went there, we asked them all the questions, what are you doing with this stuff? They said, okay, 55% we resell by the ton, 45% remains from, we take the jeans and make Mercedes doors isolations out of it, and we do, that's not an advertisement, I'm driving electrical cars. But there's downcycling apart, and there's about 25% they go for. The Germans call it fascinating enough thermal recycling, which is nothing else than burning the stuff. And we go there, and they are currently testing scanner solutions which can identify on the map, because we needed an automated version, or industrialized version. We work with a scanner solution and trying to find a way that we actually process all that material before it goes into the fire and take out everything which is pure polyester. And the likelihood is 50%, as I said, and perhaps even higher because they put the genes out before. So we believe that's feasible. We probably need to put a bit of artificial intelligence on it that we can learn in the process, but I don't think that will take longer than a year or a year and a half. And then we get the pupil yesterday, we feed it into one again or whoever, or a mechanical process, and then we go back into the supply chain. So it's more a matter of rebuilding our mindset and then rebuilding the supply chain accordingly. That's our view. Come to the ISPO stand. We will present on January. This is, I can disclose, a first fully recycled outdoor jacket. So we want to demonstrate by these lighthouse projects it's feasible. It's sometimes you just need to dare and do, and then you take the criticism, and in a few years everybody will say, well, they were right.
Thank you for the talk. It was really, really interesting. I have a question for both of you. Maybe if you can give a few ideas on this topic. I think we have a huge issue with functional fabrics, with performance fabric, because our customer expects some qualities of the end product, flexibility, long-lasting life, maybe impermeability. So how can we meet the customer expectation and at the same time keep the product recyclable and reusable easily?
Well, there's definitely one experience I did in the last 3 years in this industry. When I started end of 2016 saying, okay, let's radicalize sustainability and kick out everything else, it actually simplified and accelerated innovation. So the first thing is things we might not have thought it's possible will be possible. We found polyester that is sufficient for abrasion for motorcycles, and that's a pretty high standard. So I think what we need to get off our mind, some of the mental models of the past. When I went in the first bio fruit shop, I saw these ugly apples and I never liked them as kids. So when my mom gave them to me, I just gave it to friends. I hated them. But when you go now in some shops, and I'm not saying they're all really bio, but the tendency is there that it's not necessarily a contradiction between performance and sustainability. We said, let's lift the bar of performance and leave it there where it is and try to see how far we get. With one constraint, some of the stuff we need to rethink. I think with the performance discussion, and again, this is the outside guy coming in the industry, some of the performance discussion, probably because we haven't had any other differentiating arguments, went a bit to the ridiculous. I mean, a water column of 45,000 is kind of when you spray it with the water gun of your fire brigade, but that rarely happens in the mountains. And I think we also need to question this DVR. That was my first debate, this DWR discussion, where you probably never get to the level of chemistry of C6 when you go with a C0 solution. We need to really question, what do we want? I mean, yes, we want to stay dry. But we had the discussion recently, what's the worst situation? Well, somebody gets wet, so come on, guys. But yes, even if we want to get dry, why does the jacket needs to be clean? I mean, it's like you buy an SUV and drive through the washing garage every time and put a nano coating on it that it doesn't get dirty in the first place. It's some of the mindsets we need to question. Do we have the right to spread a chemistry which stays there for millions of years, which is completely human man-made, which is creating cancer wherever it stays? Do we have the right to do that, just that our garment stays clean? I mean, this is kind of, there's some stuff which I feel we still need to question these things. We are in a ridiculous range with some of these issues on performance. And I think we need to bring this back to a reasonable level. And then I would say we can cover it 100% with sustainability solutions.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that we should change the way we are communicating to the customer. Because actually, if you rethink all these marketing issues that always the jacket is able to lift you up to the 8,000 meter peaks. So I'm not doing this. Maybe some of you here, but not all. So do we have to communicate about the top functional issues, or can we communicate about well-being, about enjoying the nature, enjoying an intact nature, about feeling warm, feeling comfortable, enjoying walking in the flat areas or walking in the Alps or so? and what do I really need for this? Of course, everybody wants to have the SUV, and there are some regions in Munich where you see every mother is coming to the kindergarten with the child in the SUV. Maybe you don't need it, so maybe we can change, especially if we are talking mostly about outdoor activities and outdoor companies. So maybe you can change the way where the heart is going to, not to this high top level function, but to the pure nature to enjoy the activities you're doing. Maybe this is one way.
And if I may add, I think there are two levels we will see on a discussion level. The one is social. We need to wonder whether we need an SUV for kindergarten, and at the same time go pay money to go in the gym to do my exercise, or can I go on the bike and exercise while I bring my kid to kindergarten? These are social discussions we need. And then business-wise, I think what we also need to understand, these are factors who didn't go in the equation. I mean, all the CEOs of the past haven't been bad guys. They have been under pressure of shareholders, of money, of whatever, and it wasn't a relevant factor. But compared to the discussion we had 3 years ago, my forecast was in 3 years, it's there and it's there. Now my forecast is, in 3 years, is a determining factor. And then it becomes an interesting question. I believe the only thing everybody needs to understand, that tomorrow is very different from yesterday. And if we get this out of our head, we have a distance to the solutions and can really look at the solutions, which one can work and will work, and look at business differently, but also at consumptions differently, and then it comes automatically.
That's right. So there's time for one last question. Somebody who wants to know more? Okay, so all of you can have a short break, have a coffee, a drink. You know that there's the refill water station over there. The program continues in 5 minutes at 11:20. Thank you to Rüdiger.
Pleasure.
Thank you. See you in a few minutes.
Thank you for listening to Sustain and Innovate Conference by Performance Days and Sports Fashion by SAZ. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to performancedays.com. Copyright November 2019 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.